Get a glimpse of a real black hole, and more, coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey, Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is The Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and I think you're going to enjoy today's show. Obviously, our feature story today is going to be, well, we're going to be taking a look at a real black hole that'll be coming up. We'll also be looking at why Generation Z is preferring Amazon over other online shopping sites. We'll also take a look at Roku no longer being a neutral platform after today's update. We'll be looking at Google confirming its Pixelbook Group lineup, including new laptops and tablets. We'll also be looking at Apple's unreleased 1993 Walt phone in action. We'll also be looking at a crazy millionaire idea to create a real-life battle royale. Yeah, he's actually looking at renting out an island and everything. I know, crazy, right? And then we'll also be looking at a very contentious new item added in Fallout 76 that some people are labeling pay to win. All that coming up, but we'll also be taking a look at some tech trivia today, and today in tech history, so let's hop right on into it, shall we? All right, last episode, I asked you guys a question. That question was, what year was the PlayStation 3 released? Now, obviously, we ask these questions also on Twitter, so if you're listening to the podcast right now, and you're going, oh, do I have time? Well, take a look. This is episode 99, but in episode 98, I asked you guys, what year was the PlayStation 3 released? And, well, seeing as how episode 97 had a whole lot of questions and answers going on throughout that entire trivia question, today had a surprising zero guesses. And I thought you guys were gamers. I mean, like, I'm a gamer, and so I like knowing about cool, neat, interesting trivia facts, and I thought this was one right up your alley. And nobody guessed. Not even close. Not even a single guess. So, I'll give you guys the correct answer of what year was the PlayStation 3 released. I even made it easy. Guess the year. That year is 2006. Now, I said bonus points to whoever could guess the month and day. The correct answer to that in its entirety is November 11th, 2006. So, guys, you're really letting me down. Here's how you fix that really quick. Head on over to Twitter, type in Tech News Gadget, and be sure to click follow and make sure you stay tuned. Turn on notifications or however you can be first notified of new tweets coming from Tech News Gadget. That way you guys can be informed and play along. We usually do this every evening, Central Standard Time. I'll post a tech trivia question with the hashtag LITN Trivia. And here's how you play. Once you see that post, start answering. The first correct answer wins. And, well, let's just say you're smarter than the average listener if you guess the correct answer. Heck, I could say even if you guess at all at this point, you're smarter than the average listener because the rest of you guys don't. To which I say, you might be one of 69 or 70 or 71 countries at this point around the world listening to the daily episodes of the latest in tech news, of which we're grateful. This is only Monday to Friday, and it's only possible because of your listenership and your support. So feel free to stop on Twitter and let us know your thoughts, your questions, play along with trivia. But today's question for episode number 99 is, when did the first Xbox come out? See, I'm giving you guys a little gift. I said, when did the PlayStation 3 come out? No biters. So maybe I'll do it with this one. When did the first Xbox come out? And we'll have some biters there. Bonus points if you can get the month and day, too. So that answer will be posted on Twitter. And you guys can start your guessing. Moving right along here, I'm just checking, recording's going good so far. I have so many things to look at on the screen, you guys have no idea. All you see is me looking at a monitor screen, or a camera. You see me looking at a camera, but what you don't see behind the scenes, if you could see, is I'm looking at the microphone, the keyboard, and my Stream Deck, and two monitors, one of which has the recording and everything else going on. So I have to check the audio levels. I have to check the recording, making sure it's good, making sure it's not over buffering or killing itself, which it likes to do. Because you're a retarded piece of garbage computer, it should be running faster. I paid good money for that. You're not a cheap computer either. You're custom designed gaming PC. And then I have this other monitor, a secondary monitor. And I have a whole bunch of screens and windows up on that. So, yeah. Anyways, today in tech history, where was I talking about? I don't know. I went off on a rabbit trail there. Sorry. So, being that today is April 9th, 2019, on this day in history, in 1959, NASA announces the selection of the United States' first seven astronauts. Those were Scott Carpenter, Gordon Cooper, John Glenn, Gus Grissom, Wally Schirra, Alan Shepard, and Donald Slayton. The seven were chosen from 110 applicants to participate in the Mercury program, the nation's first manned space program. The news media quickly dubs the group the Mercury Seven. On May 5th, 1961, Shepard will become the first American in space during the flight of Freedom 7. Also, on this day in history, in 1943, the ENIAC contract was signed. The contract is signed between the University of Pennsylvania's Morris School of Electrical Engineering and the U.S. Army to build the Electronic Numerical Integrator and Computer, known as ENIAC, a machine capable of then a remarkable speed of 5,000 additions per second. I know, it blew my mind back in the day, but apparently, I don't even think the technology of this day gets anywhere close on the slowest day possible to those calculations. ENIAC was shrouded in wartime secrecy since its main purpose was to compute firing tables for artillery shells. Before ENIAC, this was done by women called computers working in, that was back then, 1943, guys, come on, working in large groups and using mechanical desktop calculators. ENIAC was not completed until after the war in February of 1946, but a generation of computer designers learned from its design and from the summer course given by Eckert and Malky at the Morris School between July and August of that same year. ENIAC could solve a wide range of general purposes of computing problems and was also used for classified military projects, including preliminary calculations for the U.S. hydrogen bomb. And if memory serves me correctly, I believe ENIAC might have played a part in, no, I think that was the Enigma. And I was going to say it was a computer used for code breaking, but I don't believe that was right. But I don't know, for me, I'm going off of history that I learned from the library about a decade ago, reading books more than a decade ago. I enjoyed code breaking and learning all about how was the code broken during the World War. It's actually quite impressive, and the only one that did it was a computer. A person didn't do it. So, well, a person had help, they just had to have the computer lay everything out, and there you go. So that's what happened today in tech history. Let's head on to the news, shall we? All right, first up, our feature article today. The article is called "The World Could Get Its First Real Glimpse of a Black Hole on April 10th. And if you happen to hear any screaming in the background, that's my six-month-old daughter. I don't have a choice. I don't have a studio I record this in, so we'll just have to live with it. Continuing on with the story, it's actually quite interesting, and I wanted to drop this article announcement before the actual day happens, which would be tomorrow. And if you're actually listening to this right now, most likely it's today. And so make sure you head on over to the website to check it out. I believe the website is eventhorizontelescope.org. So the article states, "Science is a realm of infinite possibilities, and researchers are always pushing the limits of what we know and what we think is possible. Scientists are working on projects that range from bringing the Ice Age's mammoths back to cloning monkeys. However, both of these projects are strictly focused on Earth and its inhabitants. What might be arguably more interesting is the project scientists are working on beyond our atmosphere in outer space. As reported by Science Alert, we as humans may be about to get our first ever look at a real black hole starting on April 10th. And when this article was written, it was written on the 5th of April. This is a pretty exciting event, even for those who aren't particularly interested in space or science. We've heard teachers and researchers talk about black holes. We've probably seen it on NASA TV or Discovery World or Discovery Channel, Discovery World, it's a place here in Milwaukee where I live, or Nova, of course, but we've never truly known what one looks like from outside of scientific simulations. We might actually be getting a real look, or rather, well, we've never really known what one looks like in action. Black holes themselves are, of course, invisible. However, the pull of their gravity and the impact they have on their surroundings should be very visible due to the event horizon they leave behind. The folks working on the Event Horizon Telescope project are the ones we have to thank for this upcoming project. Of course, I believe TechSpot, who reported the article, will be keeping up to date with what's going on. Or you can head on over to the official website, EventHorizonTelescope.org, to see the research team's first photos when April 10th rolls around. This is pretty cool. I guess they have a YouTube video that goes along with it that we won't be watching. Apparently it's a simulation. But I can't wait to see actual photos. This is going to be cool. First in history. I'm not making this up. So you guys excited? I don't know. Have you ever seen a black hole? No, you haven't. No, you haven't. Neither have I. But we might actually have our chance in this lifetime. Guys, so if you haven't been paying attention to what's going on out in outer space, you might want to, because you might not have that chance very often. So I don't know. Here's why I wanted to talk about it, because growing up, I always watched Nova on PBS, and I was always interested in outer space and what was going on outside the limits of the planet. I was also interested in whatever was going on the planet in terms of, you know, scientific discoveries and new groundbreaking, world-changing discoveries were found. So this is right up the alley with, you know, being on par for groundbreaking discoveries. So I'm always interested in it. I don't know. Are you guys interested in it? Let me know down in the comment section if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, or send us a message via Twitter at TechNewsGadget, and we'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I don't know. I'm excited. I might probably get on Twitter later on the 10th and see if I can find some photos of it when it's actually posted and share them with you guys, so be sure to stay tuned for that. Moving on. All right. Next article we got coming to us today is from Insider, and apparently Amazon has already captured its key to future dominance. And what do you mean by that? Well, teens are increasingly joining the online shopping revolution, and it's good news for Amazon. 50% of teens surveyed by Piper Jaffray in his most recent semi-annual Taking Stock with Teens report said that Amazon was their favorite website. The survey asked questions about the preferences and buying patterns of more than 8,000 teens. Now, the result is nothing but good news for Amazon, which seems to have the youngest buying generation on lock. Its score was up 3 points from the fall and 6 points from a year ago. It's also 10 times as high as the second most popular answer, which is Nike, which doesn't even compete with Amazon in general online shopping. It's just a stupid shoe store. Okay, I was gonna say a really bad joke that I heard on another podcast, but I think I'll skip that one. Nike, that's all you're getting from the joke. If you want to know more about the answer to that, you're gonna have to message me privately. We'll have a laugh. Most of Amazon's performance boost came from the category Piper Jaffray defines as upper income teen males, where the website was up 6 points when compared with the fall. 59% in that category said Amazon was their favorite website, but only 38% of upper income females said the same thing, holding steady from 6 months ago. Females are more likely to have other favorite sites for shopping, usually trendy fashion sites such as Fashion Nova, Forever 21, or American Eagle. So, there you go. It seems like Amazon's doing pretty good, and I guess Apple also wound up somewhere in this report with like a vast majority of teens using iPhones. It's some crazy number, like close to 3 out of every 4 teens has an iPhone kind of thing. And about 1 out of every 5 teens who own an iPhone also have, I believe, an Apple Watch that goes along with it. That was also in the report. So, interesting tidbit of news. What do you guys think? Is Amazon your favorite site? I know what most people would answer to that. Which site is your favorite? YouTube. That'd be mine. That's where I usually am. Hi, YouTube. Hi, Mom. Okay, can we move to the next one? All right, moving on to some news from Roku. Roku is no longer a neutral platform after today's OS 9.1 update. Now, in the past, Roku seemed to be more of a neutral platform compared with streaming media player rivals like Amazon Fire TV or Apple TV. The company gave everyone else's content equal footing through its add-on channels and in Roku search, as it had really nothing at the time of its own to promote. That's changing with the rollout of OS 9.1 beginning today. I really have to learn how to not get tongue-tied when I'm reading this stuff. Stupid tongue would chop it off. The update adds a feature that automatically plays back the Roku channel's movies and TV show at times, another that better showcases the channel's free content in genre-focused movie searches, and one that introduces a new navigation menu with offers for other Roku products. Now, these features arrive alongside other changes like a new guest mode and easier sign-in to subscriptions. Here's where it gets interesting for Roku. Among the more innocuous changes are the new guest mode and the automatic account linking. Roku in January first announced an auto sign-out mode, which allowed guests to sign in to subscription channels using their own accounts instead of the Roku owner's credentials, and guests could specify when their credentials would expire on that device, a useful feature in particular for Airbnb operators. Today, auto sign-out mode is being rebranded as guest mode and can now be enabled or disabled on select devices. It also now allows Roku owners to sign out the guests themselves. Meanwhile, Roku is making it easier for customers who move to set up new Roku devices by addressing one of the bigger headaches, logging in again to all your streaming account subscriptions. With automatic account link, Roku users won't have to re-enter their credentials when activating a new Roku player or Roku TV. The subscription data will simply copy over from their existing account. At launch, this feature is supported on less than 10 subscriptions, including Pandora and Sling TV, but Roku says that more are in the works. More notably are the changes Roku is introducing today that will see it promoting its own content and products to users. For starters, a change to Roku search, currently only in the US, is now organizing content more visually. When users search for a genre like comedy or action, the content is displayed in a more Netflix-like fashion with larger thumbnails and rows that you scroll through horizontally. However, Roku has decided to organize content by type instead of, say, subsets of comedy or action or whatever genre was being searched. So, while a service like Netflix lets you drill down into genres, Roku is instead organizing search results by whether the content is free, subscription, on-demand, or 4K. It's not really an issue. In fact, it can be useful, but it's worth noting that the second row from the top is free. Not surprisingly, this points users to the free ad-supported content from the Roku channel alongside other free sources. So, yeah. Couple other things that were added to it, but we won't be covering that. If you want to read the full article, all you have to do is go to technewsgadget.net/99, or just pull it up in the if you're listening via podcast, and you can pull all the information up, and the articles are linked right there. But yeah, it's actually kind of interesting. I mean, how often do you move to a new place or have to get a different Roku device, and you're like, Well, okay, I do this with Apple TV currently because I have an Apple TV that is not sponsored, by the way. And every time we move it around or do something with it, we have to sign into all of our stuff all over again. Well, it's kind of interesting because now Roku says, well, it'll be tied to your account. So when you log in on a new device, it'll just go, boink, and we got it all. 10 currently adding in more. Pretty cool feature. So if you didn't have a Roku, might be a reason now why you might want to go out and get one if you have one. This is even more reason to want to stay with it. Pretty cool, huh? Moving right along to some gadget news. Google is confirming its Pixelbook group has new laptops and tablets inbound. Now, here's where it gets funny. Apparently, an earlier report had suggested that Google was shifting away from new hardware, and they're like, guys, because Stadia is coming out, we're not going to be looking at any more hardware. Well, last month, Business Insider reported that Google might be shifting employees out of the laptop and tablet division that brought us the premium pricey Pixelbook and Pixel Slate, citing roadmap cutbacks. But though Google originally declined to comment, the company now tells The Verge that its hardware division actually does have new laptops and tablets on the way. Now, while Google wouldn't talk details or timing, it did drop a hint earlier today As 9to5 Google reports, the company led a session at its Cloud Next 2019 conference dubbed Introducing Google Hardware for Business, where it suggested that a new device might help on-the-go employees in a way that the Pixelbook and Pixel Slate couldn't quite accomplish. We think there's some unique things we can do differently than the Pixelbook and Pixel Slate that are going to really help give them what they're looking for when they're working in this new modern cloud-first era, said Pixelbook Group product management lead Steve Jacobs, according to the report. Interestingly, Jacobs' own LinkedIn profile shows that he leads three different categories within Google's core technology group: Pixelbook, Pixel Slate, and a tantalizingly named Emerging. We're not sure what Emerging means quite yet, but Jacobs' speaker profile for Cloud Next describes the focus of the core technology group as looking for new and innovative ways to advance the way we work and play on personal computers. So it's probably another kind of PC coming. While Google Hardware for Business is also a new name, it might not be a brand new initiative. It appears to be part of Google's previous Chrome Enterprise push. Google is also quietly working on a new operating system that could theoretically replace both Android and Chrome OS someday, dubbed Fuchsia, though Google has said it's just one of many experimental projects at the company. And obviously, it's only going to roll out more as more people are interested in it, depending on how the development cycle goes, depending on how it gets picked up and used in the news. So we'll see. We'll see. But hopefully we have some more hardware and new gadgets on the way, because, man, if we didn't, that'd be kind of weird. Moving on to some more gadget news. Well, you guys remember when the Walt came out? It was in 1993. It was this great new desktop phone and fax machine, and man, you guys could have had so much fun with it. Well, Apple canned it, and it was never released. But we have here the unreleased 1993 Walt phone in action. I don't actually have the physical product. I guess Engadget got a prototype of it. It doesn't look like they have it either. It looks like a video from Australian iPhone leaker Sonny Dixon has it. So, a 1993 prototype of Apple's Walt phone, dubbed the Wizzy Active Lifestyle Telephone. Wow, you could tell they were really creative with the names back then. Can now be seen in a new video from Australian iPhone leaker Sonny Dixon. Apple unveiled the Walt phone at 1993's Macworld in Boston, but it was never sold to the public. The early ancestor of the iPhone looked like a tablet, but functioned as both a phone and a fax machine. Now, the video shows you a fully functioning Walt phone complete with a touchscreen, a built-in address book, caller ID, and an attached stylus. The device had handwriting recognition, online banking access, and even allowed you to customize ringtones. The Walt came in both the classic white color, a prototype which sold on eBay for $8,000 in 2012. Yeah, there's actual listing on it, and the office-like gray one shown in the video. The device had its own hard drive that ran on Mac OS 6 and was produced from PowerBook 100. Parts. Apple's Walt phone was later designed in partnership with Bell South, a telecom company which was later acquired by AT&T. Before the days of email, fax machines were quite ubiquitous in American offices in the early 90s, and even though it looks primitive by today's standards, Apple's Walt phone would have been cutting-edge technology at the time. I wonder, the one question I have that just popped in my head about this entire Walt phone was, does it blend? I don't know. We shall see. I'm not blending it. Nope. Moving on to some gaming news. Well, we are waiting for this to happen. Apparently, Mr. Beast unlocked this crazy idea. If you haven't seen the YouTube video, I think I covered it maybe like a month or two ago. Just go ahead and look it up on YouTube. But apparently, some crazy millionaire is looking to create a real-life Battle Royale game. No, this isn't an April Fool's Day joke. Sometimes a story so ludicrous comes by that you need to read about it 14 times before you understand everything. Apparently, according to the author who wrote this article, scoured over this all morning, apparently not quite sure what to make of it. A recent posting on HushHush.com, which is apparently a rich person version of Amazon.com, put out a request to help an unnamed millionaire design the world's first real-life Battle Royale experience. Looking to recreate the thrill of 100-man battles on a private island, the listing is looking to hire a game designer to help design the area and the arena for this large-scale event. Applicants will be competing for a £45,000 contract that will see them working for 6 weeks on the game. That is hoping for people with experience in large-scale event management and set design to assume the role of talented game maker. As for the participants, everyone will enter a contest to be selected as potential players in a game. The Battle Royale tournament will take place over a 3-day period, with the last man standing winning a 100,000-pound jackpot. The game will be played in 12-hour chunks with airsoft rifles and touch-sensitive body armor, in case you're assuming this was a most dangerous game situation. Players will need to camp out overnight with all gear being supplied to them at the start. In the statement at the bottom of the post, Hush Hush founder Aaron Harpin said, "Battle Royale games have become incredibly popular over the last few years, and our customer is a huge fan who wants to make the game a reality in the safest ways possible. If you're a fan of last person standing movies and games, it'll be a great opportunity to have a once-in-a-lifetime experience and earn a significant amount of money." Deadline for application submissions is April 22nd, 2019. Winners will be announced on May 10th, and planning the event will likely begin thereafter. But it sounds cool and all. I'm now wondering how the designers will shove microtransactions into this. Will we see hot dog stands out on the island charging $5 for health refills? I don't know. Oh, and apparently there's a couple pictures. Looks like there's just one. So, kind of interesting. I don't know. Do you guys like to sign up to go? You could win. You could win. You never know. You know, you could find out that you suck in a video game, but you're actually better in real life. So, maybe we'll do Battle Royale in real life, shall we? Forget Fortnite, this is real life. And finally, while we're getting to the most hotly debated argument erupting on the gaming subreddit of Reddit, get it? Because apparently Fallout 76 update is adding a contentious pay-to-win item. So, Bethesda stated, well, in case you guys are wondering and you need a history lesson, Bethesda started the microtransaction controversy on consoles with horse armor, and since 2006, it has extended to every sports game, Battlefield 5, anything else you can squeeze a loot box system into, Destiny, Division. In just the latest controversy for Fallout 76, the company has made a decision to add an item to the game that players feel comes far too close to being pay to win. Once patch 8 rolls out later today, players will be able to use repair kits to patch up their damaged or worn out weapons and armor instead of relying on other sources resources that take time and effort to gather. Now, while improved repair kits that give your items even more power will only be available in rare drops, the basic repair kits that instantly restore an item to 100% health have to be bought using the game's currency, Atoms. You get that through gameplay, but you can also buy it with real money. Now, as Kotaku points out, players who drop cash can not only avoid the grind of collecting materials or atoms, they could also potentially have the edge in PvP fights by instantly fixing key weapons or armor in their Pip-Boy and continuing on almost indefinitely. Oh boy. The game's remaining community has not taken the news of the new edition well, especially after it was announced in a general update post with no additional information or communication. Late last year, Bethesda marketing exec Pete Hines said that microtransaction items would be only cosmetic, and more than a few commentators see this as crossing a line. Of course, others argue that scavenging is what this game is about, and anyone who avoids that is really cheating themselves out of the gameplay. In its blog post, Bethesda said, "Repair kits are a first attempt at a utility item like this, and we plan to make adjustments based on your feedback, so we hope you'll share your thoughts with us when they go live later this month." Well, we'll see how that case turns out. I guarantee, if Angry Joe hasn't made a video on this, he will be. throwing another fit, saying, "Fallout 76 is, well, what I figured, it's a piece of garbage. I bet they're going to roll this out. All these people are going to sign up for it." Bethesda's going to go, "Hey, we're cashing in. We're making a lot of money, doing a whole great job here going on, you know, rolling in dough." And then they're going to go, "Oh, guys," they're going to say in like a general blog post, "the feedback we got wasn't really constructive, wasn't really helpful. You guys didn't have to be so negative," but they won't say it like that. They'll cover it up with like some PR hoo-ha, whatever. And then they'll say, "It didn't work out the way that we wanted it to," and then they'll go yoink to the repair kits, and and then, you know, you're going to have to go back to scavenging and spending countless hours fixing items and doing all this stuff. I don't know. What do you guys see this as cheating? I guarantee you, some of you probably already have voiced your thoughts and concerns and opinions. And if you have, we'd love to hear them here too. So if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, be sure to drop your thoughts in the comments. And if you're not, hey, stop on by Twitter at Tech News Gadget and let us know. That will do it for today's tech news. By the way, that wraps up this episode of The Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday. The Latest in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and Facebook Watch. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to let us know and double check that you're subscribed so that you don't miss the latest episode. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick. And remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.